Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
NewsHour and Washington Week on PBS, and I welcome you to the first and the only vice presidential debate between Vice President Dick Cheney, the Republican nominee, and Senator John Edwards, the Democratic nominee.
In particular, I want to talk to you about AIDS, and not about AIDS in China or Africa, but AIDS right here in this country, where black women between the ages 25 and 44 are 13 times more likely to die of the disease than their counterparts. What should the government's role be in helping to end the growth of this epidemic?
I'm stunned. I'm stunned that they're using this hack, this biased hack. But I'm not stunned that the left-wing interests in this country are using this biased hack as a moderator for the debate. I'm stunned at what a patsy McCain really is. And you know something? If McCain doesn't have the fire in his belly to fight even a thing like this, how in the world is he going to fight radical Islam? How is he going to fight Russia? How is he going to fight Pakistan? How is he going to fight all the battles that need to be fought? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. This happened because McCain does not have the fire in his belly. And I don't like having to say this, but that leads us to the main question today. Why do you think McCain is plunging in polls in the last ten days? Why do you think McCain has plunged in the polls? And God help this nation if this stealth socialist, communist, slash anarchist, slash CPUSA, slash weatherman underground, slash you name the left-wing group that will be running this country, because they'll be running this country, all because McCain was picked as a patsy by the Republican Party. Gwen Ifill, the Tower of Special Interest. The Eiffel Tower was special interest. They picked a black liberal handicapped woman to so-called moderate the debate tonight. How much more objective can you get than this? Should Eiffel be thrown out as debate moderator? Sure. And who would they get to replace her? Well, here's some choices. Angela Davis would be a substitute, same politically. Jeremiah Wright would be a little more alive. He's perfect. They could even get Tawana Brawley. If she doesn't work, if she's not available, they could get Al Sharpton. There's a nice moderator for you. If Michael Savage were to moderate the debate, what's the number one question you think I would ask them? Why, it's the number one question that hasn't been asked yet. What are you going to do about the 30 million illegal aliens that are going to bankrupt America? How are you going to encourage them to self-deport? What costs is this country incurring as a result of people who are non-citizens? What are you going to do about non-citizens voting in the election if you become president? See, that's why they have the Eiffel Tower of special interest tonight. And, of course, last time they used a very objective gentleman, the baggy-eyed Bolshevik, Jim Lehrer, who was around, I guess, since ice cream was invented. In fact, I think Jim Lehrer was originally an ice cream man in New York, if I remember correctly. But he had such a pleasant face to the children that they used Jim Lehrer as a moderator. He asks superb questions, you have to admit. Well, I'll go to my website, because you know what really happened yesterday. We covered it. We were the first in talk radio to cover it as it was happening. Piggy polls in hog heaven with pork pack. They added $150 billion to the $700 billion rescue bill last night. Now, let's pause. We know the $700 billion was made up out of thin air. We know they don't need that much. We know that it's all to lauder the pig pen, mainly Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and the other boys of Wall Street who gambled wrongly on giving you a mortgage. But it gets worse. Now they had $150 billion. Dianne Feinstein was on the show last night on tape. We actually, we didn't record her. We ran it live as she was speaking on the Senate floor. Dianne Feinstein had the nerve to say that of the 95,000 calls and emails that she has received in her office, 85,000 of them were against the bailout. Then she went on to say, but the people don't understand the bailout. You know, Dianne, have you no shame? What a question. I've watched this creature from the Black Lagoon rise up from the sewers of San Francisco, going back to the early 80s when she came to power riding the AIDS epidemic, which she was part and parcel of because she refused to close down the gay bathhouses, even though gay activists were saying the gay bathhouses are a locus of infection, close them down. So I've watched this creature of the Black Lagoon for over 20 years now. But to see this creature have the audacity to say that her own liberal constituents don't understand pork when they smell it cooking on the griddle. If you want to read the 10 tax sweeteners in the bailout plan, go to michaelsavage.com. How would you like to hear what Barney Frank said in 2003 about Fannie and Freddie? The same Barney Frank, who's a disgrace to the human race, who is now saying that we need regulation. Hear what he had to say back in 03. Hear what Chris Dodd had to say. Hear what Chuck Schumer had to say. Hear what all of these left-wing radical socialist social engineers had to say in 03. See, the FBI should be investigating Barney Frank, Chris Dodd, and Charles Schumer. They won't investigate them because they're controlled by the Senate. FEC auditor, whatever that is, wants to probe $200 million donated to Obama. Really? Uh-huh. Yeah, the auditor. Sure, you'll get an answer. House limits constituent emails to prevent crash. You hear this? The House of ill repute is limiting emails from the public to prevent its websites from crashing due to the enormous amount of mail being submitted on the financial bailout bill. In other words, shut up, people, and let us do what we have to do. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to vote out every Republican. Forget the Democrats. They're totally corrupt and useless. Don't even bother thinking about them. The last hope we have are the few Republicans who stood up to this juggernaut. And frankly, there are a few conservative Democrats who deserve to be reelected. But I'm talking only to the Republican voters out there. I want you to throw all of them out of office. I want you to elect anybody else in the primary who's running against the incumbent on the Republican side. If it's an unknown dog catcher, if it's an unknown cop, if it's an unknown, I don't care who. I don't care who it is. Throw them out of office. Let them go back to what they do best. Lieutenant who ordered fatal taser and killed self. That is a sad story. There was a story 2 weeks ago in New York. And there was a naked, distraught man who was mentally ill, who was on a fire escape, waving around a fluorescent light bulb. But he wasn't really hurting anybody. Well, unfortunately for all concerned, a New York Police Department lieutenant gave the order to another officer to fire a stun gun at the distraught man. The naked, distraught man fell from the fire escape, split his skull open, and died. Tragedy number one. Tragedy number two, the other shoe dropped. The lieutenant who gave the order for the fatal tasering shot himself through the chin and killed himself yesterday. This is beyond belief. The guy's 44, 21 years of service, and I guess the shame was so great they took away his badge and his gun. I don't understand what goes through a man's mind, but I guess when a man, it's hard to put yourself in the mind of another man to begin with. Let me tell you that. It's really hard to figure this one out. I don't know why he'd kill himself. Shame? I guess he had a high sense of self-esteem or a high sense of self-respect as a cop. He had honor. I guess the word is honor. And he felt he was dishonored by his actions. He dishonored himself through his action. His decision dishonored his name, right? Is that a reason to shoot yourself through the chin? I mean, it's not ancient Rome. I mean, what is this? Terrible. There's another failure here, which is the police department itself not having adequate psychotherapy available to these people. That's what I'm telling you right now. The shrinks in the police department should be fired for having permitted this to happen. Senators who voted no on the bailout plan can be found on michaelsavage.com. There are 25 senators who said no to bailing out the industry, 15 repoobs, and 9 demon cats. Good for you to know. Here's a nice one for you Catholics. Vatican official attacks Democrats as the party of death. The head of the Vatican's highest court has attacked Catholics Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi for misrepresenting church teaching on abortion. The Vatican official is attacking the Democrats as the party of death. Why don't you find out if your local priest has that to say to you? Here's another great story from the LA Times. A new genetic analysis of a biopsy sample recently discovered in the Congo has led researchers to conclude that the virus that causes AIDS came from Africa. Now, you have to read the whole story to understand that, because nothing negative can come out of Africa, according to the new protocols in the media. Only good things can come from Africa. The fact that the highest infant rape rate of infant rape in the world is in South Africa. That is a hush-hush, you're not allowed to mention topic. We can't talk about it either. It's totally illegal. We can't mention that. Courageous Dutch lawmaker warns of demise of the West. We might be in the final stages of the Islamization of Europe, he says. This not only is a clear and present danger to the future of Europe itself, it is a threat to America and the sheer survival of the West. That's what he says. What does McCain say? What does the Eiffel Tower say? Which way is the Eiffel Tower leaning? And what would Obama do if this country was going to be Islamicized? Oh, he's not a Muslim? Hussein is not even a Muslim name. How dare you? Why, that's a good Christian name. Why, that's just internet chatter that he's a Muslim. Well, of course, his fathers were both Muslims, but that has nothing to do with him. Nothing to do with him whatsoever. How dare you spread such a vile rumor, Savage? Here's a great story. Marines accused in Iraqi slayings refused to testify against each other. In other words, they're made of the right stuff. They won't testify against each other no matter how the government twists their arms. Shame on you, George Bush, for doing this to the U.S. Marines. Shame on you, George Bush. You are the most cowardly commander-in-chief in American history for having persecuted the U.S. Marines this long. Shame on you, George Bush. Your ratings are what, 27%? They should be 9% like Olmert in Israel, as far as I'm concerned. Study says panhandlers can get up to $40 an hour in Spokane, Washington. Savage. Then there's other stuff on the website. Chromium picolinate may boost satiety and reduce hunger. It's an interesting story. It shows you that not everything in the health food field is crackpot. Chromium picolinate, that came along when I was in the industry. That's over 15 years ago. It was known already. I'm glad to see that the mainstream food industry is starting to understand that chromium picolinate has tremendous values in nutrition. It reduces food intakes, hunger levels, and cravings for fat. Now, I'm not telling you to go lick a bumper. I'll be right back. Savage. I feel like playing Frankie Lane, that lucky old son, if we could find that. I feel like the lucky old son. I ain't got nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. I am drained from this campaign. It's gone on for two long years. Now, here's a man, John McCain, who was being laughed at a year ago, who was suddenly dusted off, burnished, put back on the stage by the Republicans. I mean, is this the best they can do? Is this the best they can do against a naked socialist like Barack Hussein Obama? Is this the best the Republicans can do? Because you know it isn't. You know this is a setup. You know, and I know, that had Romney been chosen, he would have beaten Obama. Younger, businessman, very successful businessman, very telegenic. Have no idea when this happened. I saw it happen one day in the Southeast in a backroom deal. Probably because of special interests who did not want anyone with a spine representing the Republican Party. So they chose the hack. They chose the bag man. They chose the middleman. They chose every man. They chose John McCain. Now you say, well, why are you running him down? You're just going to get Obama elected. You ought to tell that to McCain. Tell him he's getting Obama elected. This guy doesn't even know that Gwen Ifill, the moderator of the debate between Palin and whoever the other guy is, whose name I always forget. I have to remember what he looks like. Overbite, Biden. I stored it that way, over Biden, because he's so mean. He's so mean, Biden. But McCain says nothing about a radical leftist moderator. He says nothing about Jim Lehrer as the moderator between him and Obama at the last debate. He says nothing about anything. Did he say anything about illegal aliens? No. Here's what did him in. I asked you already why. You want the answer of why McCain's plummeting in the polls? I'll give you the answer because maybe the bartender who's running him off the rails will listen to this show. Maybe McCain's mother is listening to the show. So I'll direct it to her. Mrs. McCain, your husband was an admiral. Okay? Your father-in-law was an admiral. Your son is a war hero. Smack him around and make him act like one. Tell him to stand up and defend this country by defending his own honor. Tell him to act like a McCain, not like a McSchmuck. He's acting like McDonald, not like McCain. Tell him to stand up and fight. Tell him he looks like a schmoo that's rolled over to be stepped on. He looks like a doormat. He stood up during the bailout. Golden opportunity to be the populist he pretended to be. To be the maverick he pretended to be. And he stood up instead of saying, I'm opposed to the pork barrel spending. I'm opposed to Wall Street. I know there's a problem. I have a better plan. We're going to bail out the honest ones, but we're going to give bail to those who are crooks. We're going to put them in prison and give them bail. The others are going to get a bailout. But they didn't ask Michael Savage. They hate Michael Savage. They hate everybody in talk radio except the people who can ask them the puffball questions. Why is McCain afraid of Michael Savage? What I'm liable to ask him, what the people really think? The 85% of Americans who would have voted for him, of the Republican side, who would have voted for him, who are now going to stay home because of what he's been doing? Tuesday, he had the nerve to come out and say, hey, we don't even need to go to the people or Congress. Let's bypass Congress, he said, and Treasury could just spend $1 trillion of its own. That's what he said. You know what happened? His poll numbers plunged. Suddenly the mask was off. Suddenly the stucco was off the edifice. And underneath the stucco of the maverick, there was just this old house. The only thing that could save the ticket is Sarah Palin, which is shocking to say. But that feisty lady from Alaska, as, let us say, unskilled as she is diplomatically, because she isn't very knowledgeable diplomatically, let's not put some veneer on that one either, please. Don't attack me again. I was right at the beginning. But she represents the average woman. She could save this ticket.
Savage.
I'm Gwen Ifill of the NewsHour and Washington Week on PBS. And I welcome you to the first and the only vice presidential debate between Vice President Dick Cheney, the Republican nominee, and Senator John Edwards, the Democratic nominee.
Mr. Vice President?
I could respond, Gwen, but it's going to take more than 30 seconds.
Well, that's all you've got.
What a nice lady. What a nice lady. The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed was one of the earliest essays that I've ever read that I truly understood. It was written by Bertrand Russell in 1952. I read it in around 1958. The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed is not to be missed. Then perhaps you'll awaken to the fact that, that says it all. The barbarians break the empire into east and west. I was reading about the disintegration of the Roman Empire throughout the 3rd century. And it's interesting that when you read about the barbarians breaking the empire of ancient Rome into east and west, how analogous it is to the United States of America, where we have barbarians breaking our empire into east and west. See, the thing to remember is that although Rome fell, there are still Italians. And just as when America falls, there will still be Americans. Don't worry about it. It'll just be under new management, that's all. They might even let you have a flag in your house somewhere that you can take out once a year. They may be from a foreign country, but then again, they know how to run things at a lower price. Someone's going to have to pay for the Wall Street bailout. Perhaps it'll be through forced slave labor for political dissidents. On the Soviet model, it's a very efficient method of building things. You declare anyone who opposes Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Ron Wyden as an enemy of the state. You have them interned and arrested, and then you have them work for free in the prison system. It's a very efficient method of reducing costs and paying for pork barrel spending. So let's look at the pork barrel bill, what the pork is packed into the bill. Now, you heard of some of them. You're not going to believe this. Here are the tax shelters that were put in, or tax benefits stuffed in at the last minute, and who did it. Section 211, transportation fringe benefit to bicycle commuters, allows employers to provide a benefit to employees for costs associated with bicycle commuting, including purchase and repair of a bicycle, bicycle improvements, and bicycle storage. It was proposed in 07 by Senator Ron Wyden, Demon Cat of Oregon, and in the House by Rep. Earl Blumenauer, Democrat, Demon Cat of Oregon. Cost $10 million. Extension of enhanced charitable deduction for contributions of book inventory, whatever that means. There's so many wonderful things in there. Like if you make arrows, that's a good one. You all heard about that. Exemption from excise tax for certain wooden arrows designed for use by children. The Oregon senators were the initial sponsors of the provisions. Current law places an excise tax of 39 cents on the first sale by the manufacturer, producer, or importer of any shaft of a type used to produce certain types of arrows. This proposal would exempt from the excise tax any shaft consisting of all natural wood with no laminations or artificial means to enhance the spine of the shaft used in the manufacture of an arrow that measures 5/16 of an inch or less and is unsuited for use with a bow with a peak draw weight of 30 pounds or more. The estimated cost of the proposal is $2 million over 10 years, according to the Joint Committee on Smoking Joints. According to the Joint Committee on Taxation. The Oregon senators were the initial sponsors of the provisions. According to Bloomberg News, the provision will be worth $200,000 to Rose City Archery in Myrtle Point, Oregon. You know, I get by with a little help from my friends was a famous tune by the Beatles in the 60s. I get high with a little help from my friends was also in that song. Now, what in the heck does that have to do with bailing out Wall Street? 7-year cost recovery period for motorsports racing track facility. I can't believe this. Increase in limit on cover of rum excise tax to Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. Extension and modification of the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Program, $3 billion. Here's our Hollywood benefits. Provisions related to film and television productions. That's not a bad one, but it doesn't belong in this bill. This will keep the manufacture or the production of movies in the United States of America. And as you well know, one of our main products in this country is producing pornography and filth and other mind-bending distortions. And I think that that's an important thing to keep in America. We shouldn't let Canada do it, nor should we permit Bollywood to do it. I think that Hollywood should be permitted to continue to produce the filth that flows from the sewer pipes of Hollywood to the rest of the world. So that's a good one. Extension and modification of duty suspension on wool products. Wool research fund, wool duty refunds. Reps Louise Slaughter, D, New York, and Melissa Bean, D, Illinois, pushed this one in. Here's another hot one that's really important for Main Street. Section 309, extension of economic development credit for America Samoa. $33 million. So they got one gunner who probably runs a factory in Samoa who smeared a senator. The cost is $33 million in lost tax revenue. So let's say the guy is saving $33 million in taxes. So for $300,000, look what he got back. He smeared the senator who covers that area, probably $300,000 in a donation. And he got a $33 million tax savings. This is good. Now at least you know how the system works. The number isn't 10 to 1. It's 100 to 1. For a $300,000 donation, he saved $33 million by my estimate. We ought to look into this guy from Samoa. Maybe we can get him on the Savage Nation. Why don't we find out who manufactures anything in America, Samoa? And then we'll find out who he is and how much he gave to which candidate and how he saved $33 million in taxes. There's your government at work. There's your government at work. So now I'm going to shift. I've had enough of this now. I got a migraine from it. We're all awaiting the debate, the great debate between Palin and what's his name? again, I can't remember off the bat. I have to go through the whole. You know, certain things I can remember instantly. Important things I can remember. Unimportant schmucks like Joe Biden, I forget instant. Oh, Joe Biden. I think overbite Biden. Overbite Biden. Joe Biden with the false teeth and the hair plugs. The mean guy from Delaware. Delaware is another sterling state, as you well know. Tremendous reputation. It's right up there with Rhode Island and Atlantic City. But Garibaldi would be a better candidate than Joe Biden. What a mistake they made with him. Me, what an error. You know, on one hand, the Republicans made a brilliant tactical move with Palin, irrespective of her lack of, let's say, a reading list. Let's put that aside. She's a brilliant tactical move was picking her. The most unbrilliant move in history for the Democrats was to pick Joe Biden. Here's a party that represents change in the form of Obama, and they pick an old hack from Delaware to represent change. I don't get it. You know, if it was Biden slash Hillary, it's over. 25-point win. But how in the world did Hillary's machine get? That's a story for the ages. If someone could ever have figured that one out, you know, wow. I think you'd have to go all the way back to Marcy Park for that answer. I think you'd have to go all the way back for a guy who held a gun in his thumb and shot himself in the forehead to get an answer to that question. I connect the dots, you know, I do sort of a Marc Chagall dot connecting in order to make political points. So forgive me if it doesn't sound like the ordinary person on television. They give it to you in a straight line and it doesn't make sense because they're not shooting straight. I give it to you in crooked angles and it comes out straight because the world is so crooked that only crooked angles can explain it, which is why I'm going to go to something completely straight, which is psychological nudity. Again, what month is this already? I'm losing track. October 2nd. They don't start buying till November 26th. After Turkey, they shop. We'll be sold out by then. But if you want to buy the book, you've got to go to michaelsavage.com. I suggest you do because it'll be gone already by Christmas. I'm not going to reprint. I don't even have time anymore. I couldn't write. If I reprint it now, I could make it. But my whole first printing will be gone. You know, you want to know the number? You want to know how many books I printed? I'm not telling you. After they're gone, I'll tell you, because I think it would be wrong to tell you how many thousands I printed. It said in it. So here's a story from Psychological Nudity. And again, if you get called on this show and you want to win a free book, you're going to have to know a story that you would like to read. So go to my website and check out the names of the 75 stories. Play it again, Sam. And here I am sitting in front of a microphone with a radio voice that millions love. And I'm going to close the hour out now with another story that will be in my autobiography. And it's called My First Embalming, since we talked about The Undertaker, and here it is. I was now a late teenager, and I had gone to Europe, big trip to Europe. You know, hippie, beatnik trip to Europe, see the museums, blah, 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 came back on a ship. I come back from Europe, and I thought I had become a little off base. It was a little kind of teenage angst, little nuts. So I took a job in a mortuary at Queens General Hospital. I can remember it to this day. Red brick, big smokestack, looked like a crematorium. And I go in there as an assistant to just basically mop up and sweep up in a mortuary. And I had never seen an embalming. I don't know why I took that job of all jobs. It was like a bizarre choice to begin with. I guess it proves I was a little off-base after going to Europe. But then again, I wouldn't be the first nor the last person to come back from Europe and think they were a little crazy. Just take a look at Europe. So I go down into the thing, and the guy gives me an apron and a mop. And he says, basically your job is to mop up the floor. But meanwhile, I'm watching the autopsies. This was not this is really my first autopsy, not my first embalming. It's my first autopsy. So I watched a doctor. Now, here's a doctor with a medical degree. He was a medical examiner performing an autopsy. He has a cigar in his mouth, which I thought was weird and kind of disrespectful to the dead. The guy is chomping on a cigar. He cuts open a dead woman's head, like the top of her head, to pull back the skull cap and to remove the brains for, you know, that's what an autopsy is you examine the organs. And I'll never forget it as long as I lived. She happened to have been an African-American lady and a large woman.
And he was pulling and pulling and pulling, and the skull wouldn't pull off. And he puts his foot up against the gurney that she's on, or the stainless steel thing, and pulling and cursing and the cigar. And I'm mopping the kid in the room there. I couldn't believe what I'm watching. And finally, he curses, and there it comes out, and that's it. So now then I see another man. A man must have been 50, 55, white man in good shape, just slim, gray-haired, but not old-looking, dead. And he was completely naked, as you would expect, on a slab. And the kid's mopping, and I look very carefully at the corpse. And I noticed some semen on his thigh, which, again, was novel and unique, because I didn't understand much about death at that time, as much as I since learned. And then there was a young child, 2 or 3 years old, as beautiful as a doll. Blonde hair, blue eyes, like a doll. Still and dead. For no reason. Still and dead for no reason. I quit the next day and threw in my mop. And that was my first and last autopsy. See, it's like a jazz story thing. Don't expect linear. You're not going to get linear from Michael Savage. And it's actually an interesting story. I mean, so many elements to it. There's nothing mysterious, just it's a man's life from immigrant son to radio stardom, period, end of story. Here I am. And we're going to talk tonight about politics. We're going to talk about the debate. We're going to talk about the sad sack who won't even stand up to a biased moderator who is incomprehensible. McCain didn't know about the book she was writing. Great. Oh, I didn't know Iran already developed a nuclear weapon. I'm sorry that they destroyed Israel. I'm going to get around to that in the next campaign. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Take you back in time now to the politics of Aristotle for us a couple of minutes, because I want you to understand where we are historically. The only chance we have to save this republic is for you to understand the actual degradation that we have suffered under the tyrants who are running this country off the rails. And in order to understand that, you have to go back to a book that is read by every college student, or at least was until very recently, The Politics of Aristotle, translated by Ernest Barca from the Greek. I'll read you a few pieces on causes of revolution. A policy pursued by tyrants is that of impoverishing their subjects. Okay, I'm just going to read from it, things I underline. To increase the poverty of the tyrant subjects and to curtail their leisure by imposing high taxes. The same vein of policy also makes tyrants warmongers with the object of keeping their subjects constantly occupied and continually in need of a leader. Slaves and women are not likely to plot against tyrants, he wrote. Indeed, as slaves and women prosper under tyrants, they are bound to favor their rule, as they will also favor democracies where the people likes to play the sovereign as much as any tyrant. This is really amazing to read. Here's one that should shock you. It is also a habit of tyrants to prefer the company of aliens to that of citizens. Did you hear what I just said to you? It is also a habit of tyrants to prefer the company of aliens to that of citizens. And then he summarizes the three main things that tyrants do to the people to break their spirits. The first end and aim of the tyrant is to break the spirit of their subjects. They know that a poor-spirited man will never plot against anybody. Their second aim is to breed mutual distrust. Tyranny is never overthrown until men can begin to trust one another. And this is the reason why tyrants are always at outs with the good. The third and last aim of tyrants is to make their subjects incapable of action. Nobody attempts the impossible. Nobody, therefore, will attempt the overthrow of a tyranny when all are incapable of action. He then summarizes, Aristotle does, we have here three principles to which the ordinary policies of tyrants may be reduced. One, to breed mutual distrust among their subjects. Two, to make them incapable of action, and three, to break their spirit. And then he goes into how they do it. And he goes about high taxes are one of the ways to break the spirit of the subject. But you know what's interesting to me is you read on the disarming of citizens, as you well know, Senator Dodd's father, the senior Dodd, introduced the Gun Control Act of 1968, and it was allegedly copied directly from Hitler's early laws in Germany, where the German people were disarmed in order to permit the Nazis to take over the country. I believe that when Obama wins, as I fear he will now, because McCain is for some reason on the mat, McCain is on the mat for him. I don't get this. It looks to me like a setup again. Every time McCain gets ahead, either he's too stupid to know what he's saying, or he actually knows what he's saying, and which is even worse. Can McCain rescue his candidacy? Sure he could. I could save his candidacy, so could Rush Limbaugh. But he has nothing to do with Savage, nothing to do with Rush Limbaugh, nothing to do with anyone who would criticize his policies. So consequently, he's plummeting in the polls, because the very conservative base that he so desperately needs to win this election has walked away from McCain over the last 2 weeks. Unless he changes on immigration, and unless he changes his tune on this bailout, which is already too late, it's over. Not because Obama is such a great candidate, but because the base will not come out for John McCain. That's all there is to it. He got them out. He got them interested, and that was it. The only one who might turn it around is Palin tonight. She might turn it around. If she does a superb job of lambasting that guy, that grinning fool, that pompous egomaniac, Joe Biden, and she puts him in his place, the women will come out for her saying, yep, I got to vote for her. I don't care what her politics are. I'm going to vote women, because women will vote for a woman. It doesn't even matter what party they're in. Many women will do that, except the diehards who are, tied to the Demon Cat Party. So we have to wait and see. Oh, yes, one other detail for you folks from New York City with your wonderful so-called Republican Mayor Bloomberg, who came as a Republican. Yeah, he's a Republican like my dog's a Republican, on term limits, and now he's wiping out term limits to run again. Democracy is by Aristotle. Another attribute of democracy is to dispense with all life offices, or at least to curtail the powers of any such offices. Bloomberg, you don't fool me for a minute. Idi Amin and you have life terms.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Of the NewsHour and Washington Week on PBS. And I welcome you to the first and the only vice presidential debate between Vice President Dick Cheney, the Republican nominee, and Senator John Edwards, the Democratic nominee.
In particular, I want to talk to you about AIDS, and not about AIDS in China or Africa, but AIDS right here in this country, where black women between the ages 25 and 44 are 13 times more likely to die of the disease than their counterparts. What should the government's role be in helping to end the growth of this epidemic?
God, it leaves you breathless. It takes the oxygen away from you. Intelligent America is buzzing tonight over the selection of a black liberal woman to be the so-called moderator of the vice presidential debate. And I'm playing for you clips from her last incarnation as moderator of the 04 VP debate between Cheney and Edwards, where it was so twisted to the left that it was laughable. Now, she also indicates that she's quite ignorant. She says, what should the government's role be in helping to end the growth of this epidemic? Excuse me? What in the world can the government do about an epidemic that's related to behavior? I thought you don't want the government legislating behavior. Don't you leftists argue all the time the government should not legislate anything about sexual behavior in particular? So what can a government do if you don't want any behavior legislated? The answer is nothing. But this is the kind of bias we're used to in the the dictatorship of the media that we have today. We saw what happened with the bailout. 85-90% of Americans said no bailout. And Dianne Feinstein said drop dead. Listen to the clip yesterday of Feinstein as she was giving her little speech again, the Queen of Diamonds.
I've received 91,000 phone calls and emails from California. 85,000 of them opposed to this measure. There's a great deal of confusion out there. People don't understand it. What was printed...
Okay, let's stop right there. Yes, Dianne, we understand you're a liar. That's one thing we do understand. We understand it very well, that you're bailing out your friends on Wall Street because they're the people who pack the pork into your coffers, you and everyone else. You're not alone in that, Dianne, by any means. That's why your approval rating is in the toilet. Now, of course, if it wasn't for the polls that you also own and control, the people would actually know how unpopular you really are. My prediction is Dianne Feinstein can be thrown out of office because of this. Not by a Republican, because the people in the state of California are completely twisted in their minds, and they'll only vote for a Democrat. But I would say that a conservative Democrat could easily beat Dianne Feinstein in the next election. Unless, of course, the special interests again give her $1 billion to run for office again. I mean, for the first time. The last cost of becoming a senator was, I read, $60 to $80 million. I would guess that after this pork bailout, the price to become a U.S. senator in a major state is going to be approaching, my guess, $300 to $400 million in order to run for office. Isn't democracy great? Isn't it great living in such a wonderful, fine republic such as ours, where the common people have such power over the sovereign? Isn't it wonderful that the liberty of this nation is just so based upon merit, and liberty is based so much upon justice? It's just a wonderful place to be right now. Now, I understand things can get worse, and they will. I understand that things can get much worse, and they're likely to get much worse. I'm a student of history, so I understand how bad things can be, and I know how good things are right now. But they have nothing to do with the good. The leaders right now, the rulers rather, they're not leaders. The rulers who are immune from the people have nothing to do with the goodness of America. They have bankrupted America's financial system. They have bankrupted America's moral system. They have bankrupted America's social system, as evidenced by this debacle called the bailout, which most Americans oppose. But it's a done deal, and I told you what would happen. I told you yesterday what was going to happen, and I haven't checked. I knew that the dollar would get stronger, and I knew something what would happen with stocks and gold. I knew that. I even said it on the show yesterday. I never do that because it's risky to do, because if you're wrong, you're wrong right off the spot. But I was right. I saw it coming. So we're going to have an initial jump, and then it's going to be, once we realize how much we have to pay, it's going to be a horrible thing. 1-800-449-8255. Why is McCain falling in the polls? Why? 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 Portland, Oregon. Eric, why is McCain falling in the polls?
Dr. Savage, the reason McCain is falling in the polls is primarily because of the bailout, but I have a solution.
We're waiting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Every ballot for this general election will have a write-in column, and I suggest that we all write in Sarah Palin. The good news is this has happened before in the 3rd Congressional District in Washington State, 1994, the only time in American history when we wrote in a candidate by the name of Linda Smith. Write-in will work. My other point, Dr. Savage,
yes,
is
sir.
when you get around to forming this national party, I would respectfully request that you do me the honor of letting me pick the music and the uniforms.
Now you're pulling my leg.
Love your show.
The music and the uniforms, that has a tinge of sarcasm in it, doesn't it?
Oh, no, you were right weeks ago when you referred to some of the uniforms that the Germans were able to produce. They were very, very snappy.
See, now you're moving in the direction I feared you were going to move in.
Yeah, no,
but,
I'm just...
I don't think we need uniforms to form a party. Is that a requirement of a third party?
Well, it helps.
I don't think we need uniforms. I just think we need ideas. And I have the idea here. The Nationalist Party will be based upon borders, language, and culture. Does that work for you?
You bet it does.
And the theme of the party will be the national anthem. That's real simple. Thank you for the call. Now, I did make a commitment that many of you remember, and I try to stick to all of my commitments. And I may as well repeat it because I made the commitment. And that was made 6 months ago, and that's when I was suing CARE. I have since withdrawn my lawsuit against CARE for reasons that are expressed on my website after spending approximately $250,000 facing the same bias that you are facing with this bailout. In other words, I came up against the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the liberal judges, the same way you've come up against your congressmen and senators saying no, but they do what they want anyway. That's the same thing with justice and law. I brought a case seeking justice. Instead, I got law. And that is because the law is an ass. And I mean that dramatically. And it's not a dirty word. It was said by Samuel Johnson in the 1800s. The law is an ass. And the fact of the matter is, it's almost impossible to find justice in the legal system. Every one of you know that. The only people who benefit from it are the lawyers and the judges. So I chose to fight this battle in another way and at another time, because eventually I believe the truth will come out about CAIR. And it's the government's job to pursue them, frankly. And I only wish that we had a government to represent the interests of the people. But never forget that CARE is an unindicted co-conspirator in a federal anti-terrorism trial. That will all change if Obama wins. That will all change if Obama wins, since he's not a Muslim, as you well know. His name is only a Muslim name, but it has nothing to do with the fact that he's not a Muslim. But at that time, I said to you that if I prevail on the CARE case, I will then announce the formation of the Nationalist Party after the election of November of 08. Well, I have not pursued the CARE case to the point of winning it. I didn't have the ability to take it to the Supreme Court. So it gives me a little wiggle room, but I did make that commitment, and it doesn't mean that I have to run it. I will do it, though. I'm saying it again. I will do it. Give me some time. It may not be November 5th. Give me a little time. I will do it. If ever there was a time in American history when a third party had a chance or has a chance to develop into something significant, it's right now. We understand now that the special interests own Democrats and Republicans. We see it in the poor candidates that we have to choose from. We understand it through the bailout. And we understand that a people's party called the Nationalist Party may be a party that could really take off in time. I'd have to get I know I could raise some money. But where is Obama getting $300 million from unknown sources? He's not getting it from Americans. In fact, people are saying that it's being bundled, as I told you 3 months ago, from unknown foreign sources, say Saudi Arabia, picking a country out of the air or such. So I don't know that we can raise enough money to make a difference. I think the country's gone. I personally think the country's been sold down the river. I personally think they're going to seize our weapons in the next administration. I personally think they're going to try to take away talk radio and there'll be a revolution in this country. I personally think that there's going to be firefights around America if they try this. That's my guess. It's a nightmare scenario. But I guess that this is not yet England. I don't think they're going to happily give up. I don't think the American people are happily going to turn their guns over to the left-wing fascists. I just don't see it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Again. And it's obscenity because it's a waste of taxpayers' dollars, and it goes on. And until we stop it, until we get, frankly, a president who will say, I'm going to veto these bills, I'm going to make the people famous
right,
that put them
John.
On there.
Then why didn't you veto the bailout? It's easy to say it, but when it came down to it, you went along with it, John, and that's why you're falling in the polls. And, God. Will this country go outright socialist, and what will happen if it does? Well, it's an interesting question. What is socialism? Most of us don't even know what it is. Centralization of power is one definition of socialism. The accrual of power in a centralized government is another definition of socialism. In a sense, we are already a socialist nation because the divorce of political power from the people, where there's a governing class separate from the governed, and where the governed have to surrender their private property to the governing class, which we do through taxation, is another form of tyranny in which we're in it. You know, in ancient days, there was the enslavement of Greeks by Greeks. Greeks enslaved Greeks after a battle. The enslavement of the defeated Athenians at Syracuse in 413 BC was the enslavement of Greeks by Greeks. Many of us feel politically enslaved. Of course, we're not physically enslaved, thank God, but we feel politically enslaved. What do you think this discontent is in America right now, if not a feeling of a loss of liberty? It's a feeling of enslavement, of political enslavement of Americans by Americans. That's what it is. And this country is ripe for the formation of a third party. Whether I'm the man to do it is another question. I'd have to probably leave radio. I don't know if I have to leave radio to form a party. I know I have to. I would have had to have left radio. Ooh, the past perfect. God, that was a tough. You know that with the advent of the internet, people have forgotten all tenses. There are no tenses left in the English language. We've reverted to a primitive level of almost guttural sounds. The internet and email have eliminated past. Past perfect, pluperfect. Remember those, how hard they were? That was a murder. Of course, it was the mark of a literate person who knew tenses. To have had, to have, to had, I had, I have had, I will have had. Remember those? Well, most of us can't do that anymore. Now it's just, we speak almost like an illegal alien who crossed the border yesterday. It's called the democracy at work. And our politicians, of course, are no better. George Bush is a great example of a man who's excellent with tenses and paragraphs. So, you know, we form a party, the Nationalist Party. How much money could I raise? Well, I got to tell you, it's not easy to do. You think the corporations are going to give money to a new party? You sure of that? They wouldn't give 10 cents to a new party. They want the Democrat and Republican puppets that they own right now. What are they going to do? Are they going to create a competition for their boys and girls in the Senate and the House? So it's not that easy. I mean, if we couldn't raise $100 million within the first year, it's a dead duck. And that's not a lot of money. $100 million would get you elected in a medium-sized state as a senator today. I mean, you could run for the office. Without $100 million, you don't stand a chance. Although after this bailout, I'm not so sure that even matters. I think an unknown person could defeat a sitting senator today who voted for the bailout. But that remains to be seen whether the people will remember this at all. I hope you do. I hope you vote on every Republican congressman and senator who voted for the bailout. And you send them a message that we will not be sold out, that you deserve bail, not a bailout. What a great bumper sticker that would have been. It's too late for it, though. It's a done deal. Now, if it was really necessary and if it would have saved the economy, I would have been all for it. But I know politics well enough to know it was to save Goldman Sachs, the other investment bank, and a few other cronies on Wall Street. They're panicking. Credit will dry up. You'll go broke. The world's coming to an end. The stock market will crash. Well, when they went away for... Are they back yet, Beowulf, from their Jewish holiday? They're back already. They're all the religious folks in the house are back. What a laughing stock that is. I'm not laughing at the Jewish holiday. I respect it deeply. I'm laughing at the frauds. The 30-some-odd Jewish people in the house suddenly all became, all of a sudden they're God-fearing. The day before they were voting for flag burning and taking the Ten Commandments out of every courthouse in America, along with their atheist colleagues. And then all of a sudden they have to be off for Rosh Hashanah. What for? Why'd they have to be off for Rosh Hashanah, them and Wolf Blitzer? All of a sudden they became religious? 363 days a year they're not religious. 2 days a year all of a sudden they're watching out what the man upstairs has to say. What hypocrites. But anyway, so they leave for 2 days and the stock market booms. I mean, to tell you the truth, this is the golden age of talk radio right now. We're all waiting for the Palin, debate. The guy who no one can remember his name other than the fact that he's got false teeth and hair plugs and he's mean. What's his name? Biden. Over Biden from Delaware. Yeah, everyone's speculating who has to do what and what has to do this and she has to do that and he has to do this and I have to do this and I have to do that. Who knows what they have to do? We do know everything about the debate already. She's the only thing that could save the McCain campaign. So she has the whole world on her shoulders right now. And she just might be uneducated enough to pull it off. She just might have a sufficient lack of knowledge of world affairs to do this correctly. It just might work. We'll have to wait and see. It's coming up pretty quickly.
Savage.
That lucky old son got nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Fuss with my woman.
Oh, this is terrible. Turn it off. What a depressing song. God. No wonder the 50s led to the 60s. It was necessary. This is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Don't call it. We're jammed. No room for you. Just listen. Think amongst yourselves. It's a slow, you know, we're waiting for the debate. That's all. We're all bored to death. We know that it's over. We know already what happened. We found out that we're slaves. We're political slaves. We belong to the slave class. That we have no political freedom whatsoever. In fact, if you even had a doubt about it, whether you're left, right, or center, that we have freedom in this country, political freedom, you're mistaken. Here you have a guy named Bloomberg in New York City who posed as a Republican for years. And as you well know, there's an objection to any long tenure of office in any democracy. Let's start with the top. A dictatorship is evidenced primarily by the loss of freedom of the people and a long tenure of office, unlimited tenure of office of the rulers. For example, Fidel Castro, still in power. No voting. Okay? Well, you have to vote for him only, or you get shot or disappear. So we put in term limits. Along comes this weasel, Bloomberg, and he says, I want to run again because I can. And he owns the newspapers. They all say, hey, Bloomy, go for it. Yeah, far out. All power to the sheeple. And the sheeple don't even know that there's a thing called term limits in New York. So he runs again. Not that he's such a bad guy, but he has term limits. He should respect the law, right? No. And on the other side, bailout. 85% of the people, 90% of the people don't bail him out. But we're too stupid. The tyrant knows best. The tyrant knows best. So the tyrant says, we're going to bail our friends out and we'll tax you to death to pay for it. Or we'll go to war to keep you occupied during the next administration, as Bush did in the last two administrations. We'll go to war with somebody somewhere to keep you constantly occupied and continually in need of a leader. And don't worry about it, whether it's Obama or McCain, we're going to have a war as sure as I'm sitting here. That's one sure way, by the way, out of a depression. It worked for FDR. So why shouldn't it work for Obama or McCain? More likely Obama today. It's almost going to take a miracle for McCain to win. I have never seen a guy who every time he rises, he knocks himself down. I've never seen anything like it. Never. San Antonio, Sean, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I want to know where Sheriff McCain is. If we had voted for this bailout on Monday, we would have been a $7 billion bailout. But now that we passed it to the Senate, it's an $800 billion bailout. We got millions of dollars from NASCAR racetracks, millions of dollars for arrows, wooden arrows for kids, and millions of dollars for rum in the Virgin Islands. I want to know who, by name, added these pork barrel spending ideas into this bailout.
Oh, I have the name. I have the names for you. The arrows were added by Ron Wyden of Oregon. It's on my website, michaelsavage.com. We actually have the pork barrel tax bills. Or tax, let us say, clauses that were added, and who put them in. So they're right there.
It's been sent up there to solve the problem.
How do you feel about the Leaning Eiffel of Tower being the moderator, and McCain said nothing about the Leaning Eiffel Tower?
It's crazy. I called my congressman to say no for the bailout. Guess what? He voted for the bailout.
No, you didn't hear me. We know about the bailout. We understand that. Of course they don't care what you have to say. But how do you feel about a radical leftist from PBS being the moderator tonight, the Leaning Tower of Eiffel?
I think it's a shame. If it was me and you asked me and I was McCain, I would have said, get him out, get her out of there right now.
That's right. If he had a pair of whatever... If he wore a pair of Levi's, that like the new ad show, McCain would say, no, we're not going to this debate unless you change the moderator. She's biased. That's the end of the story. And that's it. We're not showing up. We're not doing it because she's biased. We want a moderator who's not biased. Why has McCain been silent?
Well, I don't like the Levi's ads either. I've already sent them an email, and they sent me one back saying that they missed the mark on that. I told them it was pornographic and it was disgusting, and there's no reason why an American business should be using perverted techniques to get people to buy their jeans, but that's not in the
Wait, Sean, slow down. I live in San Francisco. I have watched the decline of the once great Levi's company. I saw it happening over the last 20 years with the construction of the Levi's office complex. It looks like an average liberal college, not like a place of business. They spend more of their time worrying about social policy than they do about how to make a good pair of jeans. So now that they've almost collapsed completely, they hire psychopaths who put out pornographic images of a man's crotch to sell a pair of jeans. I mean, how much worse is it going to get? Old Levi, who originally started by making dungarees for minors, would be turning over in his grave. Yes. Thanks for the call. What else do you want to talk about? Any topic is fair game. I gave you a lot of topics for my website. Didn't catch on. Nothing took. People are distracted. All they want to do is see Palin and over Biden. There's such good stories, though. To me, the best story is the arrows. How anybody could not top 10 tax sweeteners in the bailout bill. Taxpayers for Common Sense. Second lead story, michaelsavage.com. Print it, for God's sakes. What do I do it for me or you? You. This was added. Exemption from excise tax for certain wooden arrows designed for use by children. Oregon senators sponsored this. And it's worth $200,000 to Rose City Archery in Myrtle Point, Oregon. Why would a bailout bill support any shaft of a type used to produce certain types of arrows? Would exempt from the excise any shaft consisting of all natural with no laminations? This is insanity. Racetrack, rum tax, Puerto Rico, Exxon Valdez litigation, secure rural schools and community self-determination program sponsored by Reps DeFazio, Demon Cat, Oregon, Bill Sally, Republican, Idaho, Senator Wyden, Democrat, Oregon, Larry Craig, Republican of Idaho. Is Larry Craig the foot tapper, Beowulf? Are you sure? So Larry Craig is the Republican who got caught tapping his foot in the stall. And yet, look, he didn't lose his bearings. He knew that he had to put in a secure rural schools and community self-determination program, that the people would accept his foot tapping in a toilet stall so long as he brought them pork. You can't blame the man. He had to go along with the libs and bring in pork to his community. It'll cost you $3.3 billion. They say, which means it's about $10 billion. Figure three times whatever they say it's going to cost. Whatever they say it is in this, it's three to four times that minimum. I like that Hollywood benefits, too. Tax treatments for production. A historically representative, Diane Watson, Democrat, California, and a supporter of this bill. Cost $500 million. That is going to exempt the cost of production for firms in Hollywood for income tax purposes in the year the expenditures occur. Eligible for tax incentive. So this is to keep the manufacture of pornography in the valley rather than sending it to Bollywood. You know, because you got to keep what America can still do well. We can't make a car. We can't make a television set. We can't make a camera that anybody would buy. We can't make a microscope. But done. We got the world. We got the world's corner on good porn. And so, look, if you're a senator or a Republican, a representative, you got to keep the industries that are paying the bills in the country, and that's pornography. And, of course, by pornography, I mean anything Hollywood puts out with about one out of 100 exceptions. Now, here's another one that was very important and it was added. Section 325, extension and modification of duty suspension on wool products. Wool research fund. Wool duty refunds. That was put forward by Rep. Louise Slaughter, D. New York, and Melissa Bean, Democrat, Illinois. There's a nice one. Cost to you, $148 million. Section 309, credit for American Samoa manufacturers. I don't know who makes anything in Samoa, what they make. They have no idea. Coconut heads? What do they make in Samoa? They take a coconut and paint a face on it? What is this? The possessions tax credit allows these corporations to offset a portion of the U.S. the U.S. tax liability on income earned in American Samoa from active business operations, sales of assets used in a business, or certain investments in American Samoa. What investments in American Samoa? Certain investments in American Samoa. The cost is $33 million. So in other words, all you got to do is look up the representative for Samoa or the senator who oversees that area of the Pacific, find out who does business in Samoa, and find out who schmear them off with a donation. My guess is that if it's costing you $33 million in tax loss, that whoever is in Samoa with a business probably bought this for $300,000 top. I think the cost is 100 to 1. It couldn't be 10 to 1. No businessman would pay 10 to 1. He'd pay 100 to 1 he'd buy a senator for, but not 10 to 1. That's too expensive. Transportation fringe benefit to bicycle commuters. They can buy you bicycles now for free. Employees in Oregon can get a free bicycle from an employer proposed by Senator Ron Wyden, another wonderful liberal, D. Oregon. And Rep. Earl Blumenauer, D. Oregon. Cost you $10 million in Oregon. Food inventory, extension of enhanced channel to document country, a book inventory, transfer to abandoned mine reclamation fund. That's great. That is so good to see that people can get what they want in America if only the price is right. See, you shouldn't be so cynical as to say it's not representative, it's not a representative government. You shouldn't say it's not a participatory democracy. If you have enough money, it's a participatory democracy. If you only vote, they tell you to drop dead as Dianne Feinstein did because you don't understand anything. So there it is. Arrows, wool, coconut heads from Samoa. What do they make in Samoa? Bay, well, please look up what in the world they make in Samoa. I have nothing against Samoa. I'm one of the few people in the history of the world who's been in Samoa. I mean, I mean that. Actually, the history of the world, there haven't been that many people in Samoa, but there's a famous picture of me at the grave of Robert Louis Stevenson taken in 1969 to give you some idea how far back I go in that area. I've collected plants throughout the South Pacific. I used to do that. I don't do that anymore. I had collected plants. I have collected plants in that region of the world. See, I'm using the past perfect. I think accurately. Is it more accurate to say I have or had? No, I have. I have collected plants in that area of the world. I actually liked going to the Marquesas the best of all of the islands. No one goes there. Wow, is that far away. That is so remote. You know, it's the only island chain in the world that I know of that has no surrounding reef. There may be another. I don't know of one. It is an island chain that comes up straight out of the ocean, and there's no surrounding reef, just straight mountaintops. The people are very unusual. The Marquesans have amazing tattoos. And it's an amazing situation. The men are extremely Adonis-like, and the women are so ugly, it's frightening. That's another thing I don't understand about certain parts of the world. How in certain parts of the world, the men are astonishingly almost Greek statues in good looks. And the women, you have to look away almost. You have to put your hand over your eyes. I don't understand how that happens. How does that develop? Two lines of is there a geneticist in the house who could explain that to me? Maybe the men beat them and make them do the hard work. I don't know. Or maybe just living and having nothing, no hair, no nails, no nothing. You become mean, horrible. If you can't get your nails and hair done and you're on an island without a surrounding reef. Samoa manufactures beer, cigarettes, coconut products, corned beef. They can't make corned beef. You're telling me that a corned beef from Samoa is the same as a corned beef from Katz's? Soap, paint, soft drinks, juices, and handicraft. Manufacturers, no one drinks Samoan beer. Don't be stupid. That's a beer. Okay, they make it for local consumption. That's like a Primo beer in Hawaii. If you have Anison, that's a good beer to drink. If you have a supply of Vicodin, you should drink a Fiji bitter. If you have a supply of painkillers left over from the dentist, I suggest you take one. Take the bottle before you drink a local beer in the island. That's all I can tell you as a beer lover. Cigarettes they make. They grow tobacco now. Coconut products. I don't see a major league product down there. I don't know what they make. Maybe juices, yes. Maybe a juice they can make. Handicraft they can make. They can make a handicraft. Yeah, a handicraft. You ever see the handicraft that come out of these islands today? Oh, my God. Not worth a dime. The last good handicraft that came out of the South Pacific was 1920s, top. After that, it was real schmaltz. You know, Fisherman's Wharf level handicraft. Terrible. They can't even make a handicraft. What do they need to make handicraft if they got welfare? What do they need handicrafts for? What handicraft? They sit home and they watch television in the hut. Then they curse America and they collect a check. What could be better? I'll be right back. Savage.
It affects everything. If you want to buy a car, you can't get a loan. If you sell cars, you can't get a loan to buy the cars, to sell the cars to people who can't get a loan to buy them. So it has an impact. It's very pervasive throughout our economy and our society. In fact, if we do not act, hardworking Americans and millions of people will.
Particularly those who make arrows and Samoan coconut masks. You know, I mean, look. That's what it's all about, our arrow manufacturers in Oregon, people who make faces out of coconuts that fall off trees in Samoa. Oh, what is she kidding me? Whoa. Thank God God gave man the brains to develop, the ability to develop alcohol. That's all I can say. And tofutti. I mean, otherwise it would, and dogs. Otherwise it'd be impossible altogether. Hey, you can still laugh. It's not illegal, is it? Is it illegal to laugh at these people and mock them and call them names? When that happens, you'll know it's all over. It's not illegal to mock them. Slaves and women are not likely to plot against tyrants, said Aristotle. Indeed, as they prosper under them, they are bound to favor their rule, as they will also favor democracies where the people likes to play the sovereign as much as any tyrant. That takes a little understanding of... This used to be read in college, The Politics of Aristotle, in the first semester. Anyone who went to college had to read this. Not anymore, though, huh? Now the only political book you read is Obama the Magnificent. And Johnny has two daddies. Tyranny is never overthrown until men can begin to trust one another. And this is the reason why tyrants are always at outs with the good. The third and last aim of tyrants is to make their subjects incapable of action. Nobody attempts the impossible. So do you feel incapable of action? Nobody, therefore, will attempt to overthrow the overthrow of a tyranny when all are incapable of action. Well, we're at that point now. We're in a tyranny, a pure tyranny. America has not only become a socialist nation under Dianne Feinstein's rule, it has also become an outright tyranny, a total and absolute tyranny of Wall Street. A government of the rich, by the rich, and for the rich. And I'm not poor. But I'm not rich. The rich are those on Wall Street with the power. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It matters whether you have power, which means access to Dianne Feinstein. That's all that matters. How does a guy in Samoa who makes masks out of falling coconuts, how does he get access to a senator or a congressman to give him a particular tax advantage? How is that possible? I mean, I wish I could have gone to Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, and given them $30,000 for a special provision that talk show hosts in California should be excise taxes on microphones, and therefore they would not have to pay any income tax on any income earned in the state of California from the year 1994 to the year 2098, because it's important that we keep talk shows in the state of California. I would have gladly paid $30,000 if I could avoid paying taxes, but I can't. So how could a guy who makes arrows in Oregon go to Ron Wyden and buy a tax advantage for himself? How does this work? Why is an arrow manufacturer able to buy a tax shelter or a tax dodge and I can't or you can't? How does that happen? How do they go to a guy like Larry Craig who was caught tapping his foot in a stall and he gets the rural school rebate boondoggle money in the billions of dollars? He goes along with the demon cats, and people will forgive him his foot tapping so long as he brings home the pork. I'm laughing at it because I can't get angry over it. There's no point in getting angry anymore. We lost our country. If ever you thought there was a democracy, think again. If ever you thought you lived in freedom, think again. You are a slave. You are a political slave.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. Now, let's start with this. We all know we're waiting for the big debate, and everyone's prognosticating on what Palin has to do and what the other one can't do, and if he does this, he does that. If he blinks this way and she blinks that way, the women will vote with the other way. And on the other hand, if she does this and he asks her about popular science and she says popular mechanics, if she says Aristotle when she means Plato and he doesn't even know who Plato was, but he remembers Salminio and this, and then the Griffin Aquarium. They don't know what they're talking about because we don't know what we're doing here in the country. We're all political slaves. We have no power whatsoever, so what's the difference? One of my hobbies is researching restored cars on the internet, like in 1950s cars. The close happens in 1965 Cadillac convertible, which I'm thinking of selling. I can get a good dollar for it because it's been used in on events and whatnot, and it's Michael Savage's personal 1965 Cadillac with 65,000 miles. It's never been restored. It's original. So it's got a lot of flaws in it. Listen to where I'm going with this, though. But listen carefully. But if you look, let's say you're looking at Jaguars, XK150s, 40s, 120s, you read nut and bolt restoration, restored from the ground up. Nut and bolt restoration. This highly competitive car is a blah, blah, blah. Restored from the ground up. I think America needs a nut and bolt restoration. I don't think a paint job will do. I don't think new upholstery will do. I don't think new tires will do. I don't think re-chroming the bumpers will do. I think this country needs a nut and bolt restoration. It needs to be restored from the ground up. The fenders have to be removed. The bumpers have to be removed. The engine has to be taken out. The top has to be replaced. The seats have to be replaced. The gears have to be replaced. This country needs a nut and bolt restoration. And when I form the Nationalist Party in November, December, or January of next year, I am going to build it upon one premise: borders, language, and culture. And there will be hell to pay for the people who have wrecked this country, who have taken this great enterprise and destroyed it by robbing it worse than any robber baron, pillaging it worse than any invader has ever pillaged it, and destroying the fundamentals of the nation more so than Osama bin Laden was able to do after attacking the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. Now, if you think I'm giving you a campaign speech, you're wrong, because I'm not running for anything. I'm a talk show host. But I'm giving you an example of what the people need to hear and want to hear in order to feel that they are participants in a democracy, because right now you feel that you're a slave, and you are. You have been enslaved by the power class of this country. Dianne Feinstein is the epitome of this arrogance. When yesterday she said she received 91,000, play it what she said yesterday again till you finally get the message.
I received 91,000 phone calls and emails from California. 85,000 of them opposed to this measure. There's a great deal of confusion out there. People don't understand it. What was printed most prominently.
Hold on. See? We don't understand it. No, you don't understand that we know that you're a tyrant. And you don't understand that some of us have read Plato, some of us have read Aristotle. And we know this. Tyranny is never overthrown until men can begin to trust one another. Now, in order for us to overthrow the tyrants in this country and replace it with a totally restored government, we have a lot of work to do. We have to begin to trust one another in this country. The left and the right have to understand that we are on to them and that we understand who they are. They're robber barons, all of them. They're the illegitimi non coverandum. In other words, there was a statement that went around in ancient Rome, illegitimi non coverandum, which meant loosely, don't let the illegitimate grind you down. They were referring, of course, to the barbarians. But today the barbarians have sacked the treasury. They may not look like barbarians. They may not sound like barbarians. But a murderer is more to be feared, is less to be feared than what these people have done to this country. As I have said to you on this show many times, and I've read it to you on this show, a murderer is less to be feared. Cato wrote that in Rome thousands of years ago. He saw what happened when the thieves who spoke your language, wore your face, had your accent, wore your suits, wore your ties, wore your dresses. He saw what the enemy within could do to ancient Rome. They broke it and destroyed it. And if you think this gang of 400 is any different, with rare exception, and there have been exceptions, and they're our only hope, you have to reelect any congressman who stood up to this juggernaut. You have to reelect any senator, no matter what the party is, who stood up to this corruption and graft and greed. And you must vote out anyone else, Democrat or Republican. Throw them out for any unknown in your party. Any unknown, no matter how radical they may look, is better than this corrupt bunch of crooks. There's no question in my mind. I have a great interview coming up on illegal immigrants, a topic you will not hear discussed tonight by the Leaning Tower of Eiffel. Be here or be nowhere other than on michaelsavage.com, where we fit all of the stories fit to print, right up there on my website, michaelsavage.com. All the pictures fit to print.
Savage.
That our out-of-control illegal immigrants have led to a number of horrific crimes that could have been prevented if we just enforced the laws we already have. The sanctuary cities are creating an ideal environment for gangs of illegals like the notorious MS-13 to thrive virtually unchecked. Thank you, Mayor Newsom. Jessica Vaughn, a senior policy analyst with the Center for Immigration Studies, has released a report documenting the chaos caused by these gangs. She joins us today to talk about their findings. Jessica Vaughn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Give us a little background on your report.
We received a grant from the U.S. Department of Justice to study the problem of immigrant gangs in the United States and how law enforcement agencies were dealing with the problem. So we spent about a year and a half interviewing various law enforcement agencies at the federal, state, and local level, and found that one of the key ingredients that has been contributing to the success that we've had in addressing some of these immigrant gangs has been immigration law enforcement, because, as it turns out, a very large share of the immigrant gangsters, especially in the most notorious and violent gangs that you may have heard of, like MS-13 and Serenos and 18th Street, a very large share of them, maybe almost 90% of them, are illegal aliens. So this presents an enormous opportunity for law enforcement to use, because they can actually have them removed from the country rather than having to recycle them repeatedly through the criminal justice system and allowing them to continue preying on our communities and our children in the areas that they operate.
We all hear from the media how the illegals are just here to do the jobs no American would do. You mean they're committing crimes?
Well, I personally think we have enough American gangsters and drug dealers, so this is not a job Americans won't do. These gangs sprang up. Well, there have always been immigrant gangs throughout our history, whether it's the mafia or Irish gangs or Asian gangs. But these gangs sprang up when a large number of Central Americans fled from the region following some natural disasters in over the 1990s, and they settled in Los Angeles. And many of these individuals had lived in areas where violence and crime is a way of life, and they simply brought those habits and mindsets with them, and they became settled in Los Angeles, which is the gang capital of the country. And quickly, it mushroomed into a huge problem, because at the same time, federal law enforcement agencies were turning to other things, and immigration law enforcement was very lax, and we had basically no control over our borders. And so they grew and grew and grew, and eventually spread around the country to the point where they're showing up all over the place, in both in cities and also in small towns and in rural areas around the country. There were only two states that we could find that have not seen the presence of MS-13, which I think is very startling.
How is this continuing to be a problem? Why isn't somebody stepping up, cracking down on these gangs?
Well, there are about, there are thousands and thousands of gang members around the country, and there simply aren't enough law enforcement officers to deal with them. We're starting to crack down, and we are making some progress, but the other part of the problem, at least in dealing with these immigrant and transnational gangs, is that we still don't have control of the U.S.-Mexico border. There are many opportunities for people to cross at will. We're doing a better job of it, but it's not complete. And we still have very little immigration law enforcement on the interior. People can still get jobs. They can still get driver's licenses in some places. They can get an ID card. They can get a mortgage. A lot of communities around the country simply have tolerated their presence and have really handcuffed some of their law enforcement agencies in being able to deal with it by saying that they're not allowed to consider someone's immigration status. And the result is that, you know, we're really harboring and encouraging these criminals to take advantage of people. And as it turns out, a lot of the violence happens in immigrant neighborhoods.
We only hear about how ICE raided some chicken plant in Texas or restaurant in New York and how they've ruined immigrant families. Why don't we hear from the media on this very real gang problem threatening our country?
Well, that's a good question. I think a lot of communities are in denial. A lot of them have enacted sanctuary policies that discourage their police forces and their sheriffs from even asking anyone about their immigration status, which, you know, prevents them from being removed when they could be removed. It can be a tricky issue politically, but the reality is there are some very violent and dangerous criminals who are here at will when we could get rid of them if we had enough people to do it. And that's why I think it's very important that every state and local law enforcement agency know what they should do when they encounter a non-citizen, when someone's arrested who's not an American. ICE has been getting more and more funding recently, and its top priority after catching terrorists is going after criminals. So this is a big push for the agency, and they've recognized that, you know, our communities simply are not willing to put up with these individuals there. The focus really is on the criminals and getting them, you know, they're the first priority for removal. But, you know, there's a lot more that needs to be done. I mean, we need to discourage illegal settlement in general so that people can't become embedded in our communities and so on.
What do you see in the immediate future?
Well, I think ICE is stepping up, and I think more and more local police forces and sheriff's offices are figuring out that there's something they can do about the problem. Before, they, many of them may have had kind of a hands-off approach, but we hear examples over and over again where a foreign national has been arrested for a crime in a community, and he's, you know, comes in quickly, either bonds out or does a short amount of time in the local jail, is released back into the community and goes on to commit more and more crimes, just moves right on up that criminal behavior escalator. People get killed, people get run over, and, you know, people get shot, and the public starts to wonder, well, you know, this person's an illegal alien. Why wasn't he removed the first time or the second time or the third time? And agencies are getting the idea that there's something they can do about it, that they need to step in before the person becomes a complete menace, before they harm more people, and that's what we're trying to accomplish through Operation Community Shield.
Well, what about these immigrant front groups? Who are they really helping, the gangs?
And these groups that claim to advocate for the interests of immigrants often are just reflexively opposed to immigration law enforcement of any kind, and unfortunately what we see is that instead of spreading the message that victims of crime and witnesses to crime are not going to be targets for ICE, or for local police, that they're looking for the criminals, they're telling people that they need to be afraid of ICE, that you could get thrown out of the country for, you know, just for a minor traffic violation or just for minding your own business. And nothing could be further from the truth. The purpose of these operations is to target people who are a danger to public safety. Really, what's necessary is that these advocacy groups start working with law enforcement and help immigrant communities get rid of the criminals who are making life so miserable there, instead of perpetuating these myths that the authorities are out to get all immigrants. It's very counterproductive, and the reality is that, you know, police officers and ICE agents will tell you that most of their best leads come from the immigrants in communities who are being terrorized by these gangsters. and they need people to come forward and report crimes. And, you know, they're not going to be able to remove these dangerous individuals unless they have cooperation from the community. And I can't, there is not a single substantiated case that I could find anywhere in the country where someone who reported a crime got deported for it. It just doesn't happen. It's silly, but that's what some of these anti-enforcement groups are telling people.
I would think it would be in their best interest to help out against these gangs.
Well, as I said, so many of the leads for law enforcement come from the community that I have found in certain parts of the country, in New England, in Virginia, in Georgia, and other places, that most immigrant community leaders recognize that it's in their best interest to work cooperatively with ICE and not to obstruct this process of interagency cooperation. They get that. They are happy to see immigration law enforcement occurring because many of them came here legally, and they don't see why we shouldn't be using all the law enforcement tools available to get rid of the people who are causing problems and who have no right to be here to begin with. It just poisons the whole immigration system for people who want to do it the right way.
Do you see anything from either candidate running for president that says this is an important topic and they're going to take care of it? I don't.
No, I don't. Both of the candidates, as far as I can tell, have exactly the same position on this, which is that comprehensive immigration reform, which really means an amnesty, is going to solve the problem. But that's just going to create more problems because making illegal aliens legal is not going to address the gang problems and the other crime problems that have an association with illegal immigration. The comprehensive immigration reform proposal that was considered last year offered amnesty even to gangsters, as long as they promised that they wouldn't be involved with a gang anymore, which, of course, is a pretty meaningless promise. So, no, I don't think they really get the severity of the problem, nor have a real solution for it. They give lip service to immigration law enforcement, but that's about it.
Well, is your study available to the public?
Yes, the study is available on our website at www.cis.org, and it's called Taking Back the Streets.
Jessica Vaughn, God, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much. I appreciated the chance to be with you.
Savage.
Hollywood's liberal bias is well known. You know, the simple fact is that if you don't believe in the liberal talking points, you had better keep quiet about it, or it's going to be real hard to find work in Hollywood. Our next guest, Andrew Klavan, is a screenwriter and the author of such best-selling novels as True Crime, which was filmed by Clint Eastwood. It was a great movie. And Don't Say a Word, film starring Michael Douglas. He joins us now to talk about his newest book, Empire of Lies, and to talk about being a conservative living in the heart of liberal California. Andrew Klavan, it's an honor to have you on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Well, so tell us a little bit about your book.
Well, Empire of Lies is, first of all, it's about a conservative Christian man in the Midwest who is forced to come back to the scenes of his kind of degraded liberal youth in New York, and he starts to think he's uncovered an Islamo-fascist conspiracy, but he gets so immersed in the biased left-wing media that he begins to doubt his own sanity. So the novel becomes a kind of race against time. Can he uncover this conspiracy and at the same time dig into his own troubled past and his troubled mind to see if he's going insane? And the reason I wrote it is because I really got tired of a world, not just in Hollywood, but also in publishing, in which all the background assumptions of our stories are essentially liberal. Essentially, we're supposed to think that all cultures are the same, that all religions are equal, that all ideas are the same. And that very culture, which is what I call the empire of lies, becomes a character in the novel and becomes kind of one of the villains of the piece, trying to lead our hero away from the truth.
Well, this is exactly what's going on today on TV and the movies.
It's incredible, and it's just total nonsense. It's this idea that somehow there's some moral equivalence between a free society that sometimes makes mistakes and a society that is based on the philosophy of theocracy, of imposing your ideas on other people, of killing people who disagree, of suppressing women. There's no moral equivalence there, and yet Hollywood thinks that by telling those lies, they somehow make themselves seem better, more tolerant. You know, I believe that we need a culture, works of art, that tell the truth, that simply show the world as it is. And I think that one of the problems we have is that conservatives have kind of turned their back on the culture. They complain about Hollywood. They complain about the kind of novels that come out. But they don't do anything about it. They don't create new movies and new novels that actually speak the truth. And they don't create a system that rewards artists of awards and reviews and you know, and praise, which is what artists work for, that rewards artists on the right. All those things, the awards, the reviewers, they're all left-wing. And the minute you step outside the orthodoxy, as I did with Empire of Lies, you get tagged. You know, the Associated Press called me a right-wing crackpot. That was their review of my novel. And whenever somebody steps outside the orthodoxy, they're going to meet those kind of reviews, and we need to set up alternative reviews that praise right-wing works.
The main character, Jason Harrow, how much of yourself is in him?
Well, he's got a much more troubled mind and a troubled past than I do, thankfully. But we share a couple of things. He has a sense of humor that I recognize as mine. He is a he becomes a Christian after a certain period in his life, as I did. So there's similarities. Usually what you do is you take little pieces of yourself and you use them as yeast to bring characters to life. But it's not autobiographical.
How do you stay sane being a conservative living in the heart of the liberal capital of the world?
It's an amazing situation. In Hollywood, when you go into a meeting, a business meeting, trying to sell a story or trying to get hired as a writer, people in the room, the executives, the producers, they think nothing about bashing Bush, about bashing American foreign policy, more than anything about bashing conservatives in general. Whereas conservatives are holding secret meetings where they get together and sort of whisper their beliefs to each other just to hear them out loud. And that's how slanted the system is. And the reason is that people are afraid, conservatives are afraid, that if they express their opinions out loud, they won't get hired. That there's not a blacklist, maybe, but a gray list that makes it more difficult to get hired. And I've certainly experienced some of that. I think since I've come out and since I've been speaking as openly as I have, I know that some of my jobs have disappeared, and there are phone calls I don't get. And it's a shame that conservatives have to worry about that. And the other thing they worry about that really is disturbing is they worry about being called hateful. They worry if they transgress against liberal orthodoxy, they'll be called racist or sexist or Islamophobic, because those are the tools that the left uses, that name-calling, to keep conservatives in line. So there are a lot of things in Hollywood militating against conservative artists coming out and speaking openly. But I think it has to be done, because if we lose the culture, you know, we can win the Congress, we can win the White House, we can win the Supreme Court. If we lose the culture, ultimately we lose the country, because the culture drips its ideas slowly into the consciousness of the nation. And for the last 30 years, those ideas have been poison, to my mind, and we need to take that culture back.
It seems to me that there's a growing trend in Hollywood and elsewhere that people are beginning to stand up and speak out for their political beliefs. Is that true?
It's happening slowly. It definitely is happening. And I think we're going to reach critical mass, and ultimately we're going to win this argument. The problem is when the culture eats away at our confidence in our values and in our country, then when the Islamofascists come in, not just with violent attacks, but with that soft jihad of lawsuits and cultural attacks, we have nothing to fight them with, because we'll have lost confidence in what we are. We need art and a culture that reinforces the values of the Constitution and the values of the West, so that when these guys come from their failed societies and say that our successful society should be more like theirs, we can say, no, we're not going to do that, because we know what we believe in and why we believe it.
Your characters have such a gritty depth to them that they seem to increase the sense of realism to me. Is that something you consciously focus on?
One of the things I'm concerned about is that as long as conservatives call for squeaky clean stories, as long as they call for heroes who are simplistic and say, oh, we just want to see stories about right and wrong where everything is very clear, as long as we do that, the left is going to own the culture. I want to tell real stories about real people with real depth that have conservative values and a conservative point of view, because the first rule of conservatism is that people are not perfectible. They have flaws. They have hidden corners. And I show my heroes and my villains to as deeply as I possibly can to show you why in the real world there are certain values that work and certain ones that don't. So I think it's really important, and especially in thrillers, because I love thrillers. I think thrillers are a wonderful vehicle for showing the world, because they give you heroes who have to race against time to find out what reality is. And I think that's what all of us have to do in our lives. This novel really is different. You know, I'm not just saying it. And if you pick up this book and read even the first three pages, you'll see that you're listening to a voice you have not heard before in mainstream fiction. And I think it'll catch in. I think it'll pull you in. And that is the one thing I'd really like to say to people, because it's right there, right on the first page and right through the book.
A lot of the media seem to focus on fluff pieces of news like Britney's clothes or Paris's acting to keep us entertained. Is there hope for the media and our society, in your opinion? You think they're ever going to get any better than they are?
I think the entire country, especially our media, is in a state of denial. I think they turn to stories, silly stories like, you know, global warming as a crisis and, you know, Britney Spears and whether she's wearing underwear, to take away from something that really is going on, which is that our values are under assault around the world and within our own country. And I think that as long as they can keep us kind of, you know, goggling after the latest starlet and worried about what car we drive and what light bulb we use, it takes away from the real values that we need to be talking about, the values of the West, like tolerance and honor and duty, that we've kind of let go by the boards for a lot of superficiality and frivolousness. Listen, I like a pretty girl and a pretty starlet as much as anybody, and there's nothing wrong with some of that. But I do think the mainstream media keeps up a kind of steady drumbeat to detract, to take your eye off the ball, to take your eye off the real issues that are facing the country.
What's your opinion as to what the country needs to do to get back on the right track?
Well, I think the thing is that conservatives especially need to stop complaining and start creating. I think we've done this in a lot of ways. We've done it with think tanks that deal with political issues. We've done it with talk radio that has countered the mainstream media and the news. We need to do it more, and we need to do it fearlessly. And finally, we need to do it in the arts. The arts at this point are a wholly owned subsidiary of the left. And as I keep saying, if we lose the arts, we lose the minds of the people. And so we need to speak out fearlessly without being afraid of being called names. We're going to be called racist. We're going to be called sexist. We're going to be called hateful. We need to just speak our truth without hate and say what it is we see. And once we do that, once we show that we're not afraid, that the people who can speak and can create are not afraid, then other people will stop being afraid too. I really feel that conservatives have developed a sort of cultural cringe where they walk around terrified that somebody's going to call them a name or even that they're going to lose their job for something they said. And we need to speak out against that. We need to speak out every time somebody is censored. We need to speak out every time the New York Times refuses to print something because it might offend Islamofascists. We need to present our opinion honestly and directly and keep the values of the West alive.
Andrew Klavan, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks a lot, Michael. It's been great talking to you.
Savage.
Is not an option. Retreat is defeat in Iraq. Al-Qaeda, they're acknowledging even, along with General Petraeus, that Iraq is the central front on the war.
That's Sarah Palin. Everyone's waiting to hear us, so we're going to listen. Play more.
Extremists who hate America would love that stronghold to be built in Iraq. If we were to lose there, we're not going to be any better off when we fight in Afghanistan either, nor the other areas where terrorist cells are growing across our world. We have to keep our eye.
That's Sarah Palin. Everyone's waiting to see how she performs in just a few minutes here on the Savage Nation against the old guy, the old mean guy who everyone's saying has to keep his horns in or else he'll alienate women. And he's got a tough job in his hands, thank God, because he deserves it. I have time to give away two free copies of Psychological Nudity in this segment before I leave, so I suggest you go to michaelsavage.com and choose one story of the 75 you can't wait to read on my website. Right now, I want to go to an earlier question I raised. We looked at all the pork that was stuffed into the bailout, and it went from $700 billion to $800 billion. Some of the tax giveaways were astonishing, one of which was for firms in Samoa. I think we found out which firm and who might have gotten the schmear job. Medford, Oregon. Ron, what's your guess on what is
made in Samoa and which congressperson engineered this giveaway?
Well, remember, American Samoa is separate from Western Samoa, and I think the information you gave about the manufacturing could have been in the West. But it is. There's a large, large tuna cannery in Pango Pango, right in the bay there, and also a can company. It used to be American Can Company that manufactured the cans for the tuna cannery. And I think this came up sometime in the last great big pork pile about some kind of soft deal for Samoa, Western Samoa, or me, I'm sorry, American Samoa, and I think that was Pelosi, and I think her husband was involved in that company there.
Oh, no kidding.
I think
no kidding. I would be shocked, Ron. I would be shocked if it was Pelosi and the old tuna company from San Francisco. I mean, I know they left I know that the canning companies left Cannery Row about the time that John Steinbeck left Cannery Row. And I know that the company was outsourced to American Samoa, but how in the world can a tax break be written in for one company in American Samoa by one congresswoman? Doesn't that strike you as odd?
They're doing it all the time, aren't they?
And you know, well, wouldn't you like to see a tax break for your business written into the bailout?
Absolutely, but that never comes around. Thing that was very interesting is I heard just before I turned you on today, I was driving home, and I heard that Senator Wyden here in Oregon had voted against the Senate bill, which is interesting because he had his bit of pork in there.
Oh, yeah, he put in the arrow clause.
Apparently he voted against, according to what the news here said, and Smith, who is the Republican in Oregon, Senator, voted for it.
So which one of them stuffed it with the arrow into the bailout?
It was Wyden.
A wooden arrow bailout.
Wyden, Senator Wyden, but he is...
Oh, yeah. Well, he's a very good liberal. He wouldn't do anything like that. He wouldn't do anything below board. You know that. He's too good. Just ask him. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you get on the show and you know which story you can't wait to read, you're going to win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. But everyone's waiting not for that. They're all waiting for Sarah versus Over Biden. The Over Biden man has a tough job ahead of him. Thank God they picked such an old glue horse like him. What a mistake they made. Oh, did they make a mistake. You know, they ridiculed Sarah Palin for being, let us say, how shall I put it? They're making her into a bumpkin. What they don't understand is they're actually playing to her strength. That's her strength, idiot. No, she's not from Manhattan. No, she hasn't slept around since she's been married. No, she doesn't appear in a pornographic movie. No, she has not gone to the vagina monologues. No, she's not a big supporter of the pornography industry in Hollywood. That's exactly why she's appealing to most women in America. So it's going to be interesting to see how she's got to come out strong, because she's the only thing that could save John McCain. Right now, he's destroyed his own campaign by supporting the bailout without reservation, no less. I mean, I could see him saying, look, we need a bailout of some kind, but not the one that has been put forward. And we got to punish those who ripped us off. There's going to be no golden parachute. He didn't say any of that. The jerk got up there and said on Tuesday, we should bypass the Congress altogether and just spend the money. I could not believe this. What happened? Bingo, plummets in the polls. The only thing that could save John McCain is a Sarah Palin win tonight, a big one. She's got it can't be a nose. Unfortunately, the cards are stacked against them by the Leaning Tower of Eiffel. The Leaning Tower of Eiffel, a far-left liberal from PBS who's a minority and in a wheelchair because she broke her ankle or sprained her ankle. Now, how in the world can this have happened? Why didn't McCain object? Why didn't Palin object to this? Why are they so afraid of these Bolsheviks on PBS? Why that bum, who I've not liked for years, that baggy-eyed Bolshevik who did the presidential debate, you think he fools me? He attacked me pretty good on his show. He made me into some devil. Why? Because he knows that I'm an independent voice, unlike him. He knows I'm a free man and he's a slave. He knows he's bought and sold like so much locks. He's a lox with baggy eyes, Jim Lehrer. That's why he attacked Michael Savage in that thing he did the other night, a week or two ago. You think I care what he does? He's a has-been, never had an audience, and never will. Let him publish a book and see if anyone would buy it. The same number of people who bought Nancy Pelosi's book will buy his book. They're all part and parcel of the same government media complex. But they haven't heard the last of Michael Savage. They've only heard the beginning. If they think that the 15 years of me in radio is the end of me, what they don't know is it's only the beginning of me. They don't know that yet. This is only the first act. The next act is going to be the Nationalist Party, and then they're going to have something to play with, believe me. They're going to have something to deal with, rather. Sacramento Keith, welcome to the Savage Nation. If I give you a copy of Psychological Nudity, which story is it you can't wait to read?
One on Frank.
Why? What do you like about him?
About the bad breath going over the Kosciuszko Bridge.
Well, why do you like that story of all of them?
I relate to you because I used to live in the Bronx. I used to have a flower shop in the 70s and the 80s in Parkchester.
Unbelievable. An actual flower shop. That's a gentle... isn't that a gentle business? Today you'd be out of business, though. The flowers have probably been outsourced.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You mean people buy flowers now from India? They don't even come from America.
Oh. Yep.
Terrible.
They used to come from California, the flowers. Now they're coming from Colombia, South America.
Well, if you get flowers from Colombia, guess what else you could pack in the ship with the flowers?
Yeah, the white stuff. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. How come there were no tax breaks for Colombian cocaine manufacturers? I would have thought that would have been in there, now that I think about it. Or marijuana farmers in Colombia or Mexico. Keith, stay on the line. We'll send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. You're a winner. Mark, one last book we're giving away. Mark, San Diego, which story is it you want to read in Psychological Nudity?
Bowie and his monkey.
Why?
It reminds me that there's consequences for decisions in life, even when you think you're doing something good for someone else.
You mean even if you buy the wrong pet, you can wind up getting screwed.
Well, you're helping the animal because it's not having to live a rough, you know, animalistic life, and it might die young. You're making it live longer, or you're dying younger.
All right, you stay on the line, Mark. You win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. It's coming out of the printer in about 2 weeks. It'll be shipped to all of you good people who've ordered it. And you're going to get a copy if you order it, let's say, between now and the end of the month. I guarantee you'll get a copy for the holidays. I cannot guarantee you're going to get it after November 1st because they may be sold out. And I can't reprint in time. It's that simple. What a gift. What a gift. Well, I know what you're all waiting for. Let's root for Sarah. Let's boo the leaning Eiffel Tower, the phony moderator.
Savage.